The signal you are receiving is coming from deep inside of FEMA Region 1, well within the battle lines of the municipal corporation known as the Commonwealth of Taxachusetts, radiating out to the darkest corners of Al Gore's internet from our secret broadcast bunker cleverly disguised as a middle-class living room. This is Red Pill Politics. Well, howdy do all you patriots out there. This is hour two, Red Pill Politics Show. Mighty fine to have y'all on board and to be spending the Saturday evening with all you folks. Been kicking around a few things tonight, talking about that ESG, environmental social governance. All right, it's already slathered all over the banks. All right, and if the banks are using it, everyone who does business with the banks is going to need to be measured by it, and sure enough, they are. All right, go check it out. You need to be pushing back on this, because eventually, in the not-too-distant future, in your town, you're going to have yourself a little committee that is going to be grading your public works projects and assigning them a score. So if you need the roads resurfaced out there in the countryside where you single-family homes are, well, you folks in that neighborhood may not have a very high ESG score, and therefore they're going to have to go in and put another bike lane over in front of the low-income housing. All right, and that's where your money's going to go, only to those things that have gobs and gobs of social and environmental justice. Two things which are figments of other people's imaginations, because there's only blind justice here in America. All right, environmental justice, make-believe, doesn't exist. Economic justice, it's make-believe and does not exist. Social justice, also make-believe and does not exist. All right, if in their club, and when they're playing their games, they want to use those terms with each other, they can. But we've let them use, we go in and use their terms, trying to argue a point, and we use their terms. I don't know. And here we are, now, you go and apply for a job, male, female, or other, custom. That's what I hear. You build your own, right? Amazing what we've come to tolerate. Got a caller right from the my backyard, right in good old Taxachusetts. Rob, can you hear me?
Loud and clear, Dave. How's it going tonight?
Good. How are you, Rob?
Pretty not too bad, thanks.
Excellent. What's on your mind?
Thanks. Hey, I was curious to see, you know, because if I remember correctly, you're like a chapter president of the State Constitution Party. Is that correct?
Yes. I've been out here trying to revive the parties and get things going here in the Northeast area, as we've suffered years of people just going around and mumbling and regurgitating that a third-party option could never happen. It's going to be Republican or Democrat. And I remind these folks that the only person that ever told you that is either a Republican or a Democrat, and that you live in a state where 56% of the people are unenrolled and have already decided that maybe a third-party option might not be a bad idea, and I couldn't think of a better way to go than the Constitution.
I think you did the right thing there. I think it'd be pretty interesting to see how well third parties would be able to do at any kind of the local offices before, you know, to kind of like set a foundation before they move over to like state or national office. But be that as it may, I was curious because if I remember correctly, you also used to be the president of the Mass Republican Senate Assembly, and you had an inside line on some of the Mass GOP stuff that was going on. All of that being said, here's my question. You were talking earlier about shaking some of the foundation that's coming up with the 2022 elections at the national level. I was curious to know if you had heard anything or if you have any kind of speculations about what could be happening at the state level with the 2022 elections for the state governorship. I'm sure you know this already. Baker and Polito have already decided they're not going to be running for a third term. So now we have another guy who's been endorsed by Trump, Jeff Deal. He now has a lieutenant governor candidate running with him. What are your thoughts or what are your observations? Because now you're not in the party anymore, so you have the opportunity, you have the luxury of being a little more objective about about your observations. What do you foresee how this could unfold this fall?
Well, first of all, my years with the Republican Assembly, and I served two terms as the president of that organization. I was a member for a number of years, and the Republican assemblies existed as GOP reformist. They were there to drag the GOP back to its conservative roots. And that organization, like all organizations, had the typical problems and dynamics that were at play. But I was not one to be reserved in my criticisms of the GOP. In fact, if you go back and look, I don't know if they're still archived, but I do believe I called for the immediate resignation of at least two, if not three, of the GOP chairs for cause, and I listed it out there. I spent a long time working with some very awesome patriots trying to bring conservatism back to the party, and also trying to nail its foot to the ground on some of these things, because I found the mass GOP, they were like the GOP everywhere, and in some cases worse. Massachusetts has gotten pretty soft, but they changed their platform, their messaging. It really changed every election cycle, just like the Democrats, and it was an attempt to see what they could, you know, how far they could push it and still dupe enough people into voting for them. And they talk about values in their speeches, and I used to really jump on them, and I said, guys, unless you stand for something conservative and not waver from it, since you can't call what you're doing to your platform and to your website your values. Values don't change. So I was very critical of that. And when I left, I finally left the party, and it was after twice being elected as a delegate to the national convention. And I watched the party's reaction as they sat there and talked about a big tent philosophy. And they talked about, grassroots. We got to get those grassroots in here and build up some political capital, they called it. And then turn around, and they fought so hard. And I think three times now they have tried to eliminate caucuses in Massachusetts because opinionated conservatives like myself were getting up there and getting elected to the national convention over their mush-mouth senators and sheriffs and other do-gooders. Yeah. The people really did like that message, and I don't know why they didn't take that messaging from those of us that tried to bring reform, to package it up into a plan as a GOP and push it out through their town committees, as they would really have had a groundswell of support. So right now, and I'm going to be honest with you, I have no political heroes.
Right.
I look at Jeff Deal as yet again, I think we're being asked to choose the lesser of evils. If I were to package up and put forward my idea of the perfect Republican or the perfect conservative candidate, it wouldn't be Jeff Deal.
Yeah, I would agree.
Now, what I would do, and this is what I finally landed on, and then shortly after, I just left the party altogether and began with the Constitution Party, because it has with it the solution that I landed on. And that was that my time, my effort, my money was worth more putting it into getting a Patriot on a Board of Health or a Patriot on a planning board than it was to hold my nose and hope for the best there. And it was the only way that we, the people, were going to train the GOP establishment that we are no longer going to take the lesser of evils. That if you submit a substandard candidate, we are not going to invest in them. Because up till now, we have, haven't we? When I say we, I mean Republicans, we've kind of gone along with it.
Yeah. Did you ever make the connection that maybe the Massachusetts GOP is essentially run by undercover Democrats, perhaps?
Oh, I'm certain of it.
Yeah, okay.
I'm certain of it. I used to chase Vincent DeVito, literally chase him around his van with a camera in his face. You know, he was the Mass General Counsel for the Mass GOP for a number of years. He was behind Romney and the others. I found a grant application from HUD from 2010 where he actually called out Agenda 21 by name, is that landmark planning document that they were going to incorporate into this big grant application to push sustainable development and social justice in social media. All right, his law firm made their money by suing municipalities who weren't green enough. And, of course, I went off the edge when he started to manhandle a female delegate from North Dakota when we were there lobbying, trying to get some of our platform items on. The guy's a monster. And if the Mass GOP can't get rid of people like Vincent DeVito, Ron Kaufman, rotten to the core. He's a lobbyist for Solyndra. Remember Obama's solar scandal there?
That's right.
He was the lobbyist for him.
I have one last question, Dave, and then I'm going to let you move on to another caller. Knowing that that Baker is not going to be, you know, committed to a third term, if, say, for the sake of argument, if Deal starts moving out far enough ahead in the polls that Healey could, you know, start getting nervous, would it be a surprise at all if perhaps maybe Baker or maybe some of his cronies could possibly sabotage the Mass GOP structure in such a way that would not allow Deal to win? Because, I mean, if that's possible for Healey to get in, the state's finished.
Yeah, I think that is possible. In fact, I was only half joking when I said that I thought Charlie Baker would be a registered Democrat before he left office, as I was actually afraid that he might run with Maura Healey. You know, up to a certain point. It's too late for him to change his reg now, I think, and do that legally. But I was legitimately wondering if he might do that, because then there's no way we could stop either one of them.
Right, right. Yeah, because my thinking, if he were to sabotage, you know, somehow his cronies were to sabotage the party's infrastructure and basically handicap Deal and his running mate, I think her name is Leah Allen Cole or something like that, or Cole Allen. Yeah, if they do, you know, basically Baker's cronies sandbag Deal so that Healey can get in. That's it. The state's finished.
Yeah. I mean, what they would do is they'd start phone banking. They did it with us. We had a guy who ran for U.S. Congress and was kicking ass, too. But they call up and would cancel our venues, get our venues canceled, literally put out notices to town committees not to donate, not to go to our events. But they do a lot of backdoor stuff to undermine your efforts. What few efforts you have. And they'll send in people also that look like saviors, like they're going to come in and volunteer on your campaign for, short money. You pay them, and they scuttle the campaign.
Yeah.
And that's pretty much what Vince DeVito did to Trump. Because he was the head of the campaign, knowing, the Trump people didn't recognize who he was. And he sat in his state and did virtually nothing. I remember the Trump people chomping at the bit. Where's the signs? Where's the signs? Where's the rallies? And the only things that were done by the people themselves. Vincent DeVito just sat on his hands and took the money and scuttled the campaign for the state. But worse yet, later on when Trump got in, he appointed Vince DeVito to the Department of the Interior. Yeah. You know, Trump had some bad people around him that, you know, were giving him bad advice. He's a bad actor, this guy, a total greenie, and we all know it here, but Trump's people didn't get that message.
Well, hopefully Trump and his people have learned their lessons the hard way, because some of the best lessons in life are learned the hard way.
Yeah, they are. What do you think about the election? Do you think Mass had a better turnout for Trump than what the official records are showing?
I would not be surprised. I think a lot more people are not necessarily socially conservative, but they are business friendly, as business friendly as Trump was.
Well,
and I think that's really what drove the vote more so than the social than any of the social issues. It was more the economic and business issues. Because I mean, how do you hold together a society if you've got too much government standing in the way anyway?
Yeah.
You know,
well,
so I
you
think
know what?
Some people are starting to figure out start to appreciate the value of tactical and strategic voting based on values and issues, as
sure.
opposed to parties and personalities.
Yeah. Well, you know what? It sounds like you might be prepared to throw some support towards Deal. I would definitely recommend going to his events if you're a Republican and conservative and want to see that show up in your politicians. And now is the time to shape those candidates. When he takes a stage and if you're given an opportunity to ask a question, you know, don't ask him what his favorite flavor of ice cream is. Ask him if he'll go on record and pledge to get this pornographic filth out of our schools.
That would be great. Or at least deregulate homeschooling.
Right on.
You know, I've met Deal a couple of times, and, you know, he seems like an okay guy. Kind of naive and kind of affable, but he's willing to listen. If you present the case in very clear terms and, you know, and have all your rhymes and reasons, he's willing to hear you out.
Yeah.
And I think he'd be definitely a better candidate than Doughty is, because he's from the dish rag wing of the Republican Party.
Hmm.
They're with the yellow moderates is what I call them. You know.
Yeah. Well, you know what? If things don't go well for you guys in the election, remember that the Constitution Party's out there, and we are going right down where the roots are, and that's in our communities, because we're finding that if you put a board full of patriots on your planning boards, your conservation, your city council, and when they send emails to the governor's office saying, we're not going to mandate on the people, we're not going to kill these businesses, we're not going to do it, it seems that they answer and respond to those a lot more than they do from me individually. So we can keep a lot of bad stuff out at the local level. I know that's been an effort within the GOP to try to revive the town committees. I know it was when back in the days when I was a Ron Paller in 2008, that was our main task, is to revive RTCs. And in Massachusetts at the time, less than half of them, of the towns, there were 351 municipalities, and the cities broken down into wards, obviously.
Right.
So you have less than half of those represented with any type of Republican representation. And of those that were formerly on paper, they were propped up. They had three people that were on the books, and they funneled a lot of Romney money in and out of the state.
Yeah.
You know? So we got Obamacare from Romney Care, you know.
right, yeah. I know when one is basically stepped up to the other. Now that you got me thinking about it, one last question. I know you were, I think it's good that you're working with the Constitution Party and trying to build it up for candidates for local offices throughout the state. I think it's a very healthy thing for the Mass GOP to have some competition to keep them scared and hungry. That being said, let me ask this question.
Yeah.
Could you ever foresee any kind of like a debate form or three-way party form between Mass GOP, the Constitution Party, and maybe the Libertarian Party at the state level? What do you think of that?
I'd be game.
Yeah.
I would be game. I can argue our points, and I can punch holes in theirs. Absolutely, I would accept that challenge. And the divide in the Libertarian Party, and that's why I'm hoping we're going to grab a few people from there, too, is they're divided right down the middle.
Yeah, you could thank Bill Weld for that.
Yeah, amongst other things. But you've got a faction of the Libertarian Party now that is not in favor of, you know, we should dissolve our borders. All right, so the property rights advocate in me says that's a bad idea. You don't really have a nation. You don't have property that's defensible if you don't have a border, and it also leads to economic destruction. So for that reason, you've got a big fissure, because there's people that do not believe in that. They believe in America and having a border. And then the life issue, that's divided them also. Question. I would absolutely love to engage any of the politicians and candidates in an open debate on these issues, because they all tout the Constitution. You notice, Democrats, Republicans, both, they get out there and tout the Constitution, but a completely bastardized and warped view of it. Not as they propose it.
They're not going back to basics or anything like that.
You know, that's what this country needs, back to the basics.
Now, I'm going to let you move on to another caller, Dave. I want to say thanks for your time and thanks for having me on the show. I appreciate it.
Excellent. Thank you for the call, Rob. All right. We got to come at it. And I'm not, I keep saying this too, because I got some great friends that just have not been able to cut the cord with the Republican Party, and they're still fighting like hell in there, and God bless every one of them. We've got to push back. A million pinpricks, okay? Just like them, that death by a thousand cuts, let there be a million pinpricks coming back at the establishment. The us and them isn't the Democrats and Republicans. It really isn't. The them part of it, has created that division to keep us busy, to weaken us. That's what I think. I'm so polarized. Oh, right. We got a pair of calls from Texas coming up. We're going to start here with Mark. How are you doing tonight, Mark?
Dave.
How are you? Thank you much for the call. What's on your mind tonight?
Hey, thanks, man. Long time no talk.
Yeah, you been behaving?
Yes, sir. A little bit.
That's no fun at all.
Well, hey, I'm ready for spring. I'm ready for warmer weather.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it, too.
Yeah, we had probably our hottest day of the year. It's beautiful. I'm ready to go swing a golf club.
Oh,
hey, great show, Dave. A couple quick points. We hear about the fertilizer shortage, right? Dave.
Yep. Yeah, I hear you. Go ahead, the fertilizer shortage.
Yeah. Well, what I was thinking, Dave, I've been organic for 15 years, my property. What a great opportunity to get off this fertilizer and go organic or natural.
I mean, that's doable, but I mean, in your situation, and you got to be able to take this and scale it up, but in your situation, you, rather than buying bags of fertilizer, you know, if you want to grow corn, and corn is a pretty fertilizer-dense crop to grow. You want to grow corn in your garden, rather than buying bags of fertilizer, you're likely to have chickens and goats and other things where you would compost and create all the organic matter and nutrients that you need through that. And in in an agricultural situation where you have large sprawling farms that are hundreds or even thousands of acres, don't have animals that are right there unless the situation developed. And this is the cool thing about free markets and, you know, the freedoms and liberties that we have here, is there's no economic vacuums. And if there was an overall plan for agriculture in this country that had the lightest bit of planning to it, where we had people that were raising cattle nearby and chickens, where that waste, normally they'd have to deal with the waste and it's a pain in the neck. Here you've got nearby farms that need that. And it begin, you've got to think of agriculture as, you know, like the cycle of life, the circle of life, is there's a circle of things that exist there. But yes, there are also outside inputs. What about the feed for the animals? I mean, will they...
I have an oasis here. I mean, I've got, I've seen a mountain lion cub. We have a family of bobcats. We got hawks. We got field mice. Owls, you know, 100 years old. I mean, it's just wasps that keep our driveway clean.
You know, you're starting to lose me now. Those aren't farm animals. You said you had a good garden, good crop, and you were talking about food 1 minute. No.
I'm just saying that why can't we go organic nationally? That was my point.
Yeah, I'm following you, but that's where I was ending up on, is that there are places in there that require outside inputs.
Yeah, all right? I don't know if it's scalable. Yeah, what you're saying is it's scalable, I don't know.
Yeah,
but
I mean...
The second point I wanted to talk about was the oil.
Yeah.
You remember, Dave, I talked to my buddy in Santa Fe. It was either a year or a year and a half. It was during COVID. And he's an operator in Midland. He's got a, you know, medium-sized operation. He's not a big boy.
No.
You remember when the oil went down to zero and negative numbers?
Yeah, and there were places, farms being told that they had to dump their reserves. A lot of ranchers and the big farmers actually had tankers out there that they'd top off with because they used so much fuel. And there's all kinds of weird things going on.
My buddy.
Counter the collapse.
In the oil business, he told me it's over. So I think this oil shortage started with us in Midland, Texas. He said it was a ghost town, Midland. And he's been there for 30 years. He's finally sold out. So I think they sold us down the river, Dave.
Yeah, you know, when
the oil industry,
The previous caller.
I mean, you got prices negative. How are you going to make money?
No.
You can't.
No, I mean, it's all a rigged system. There's subsidies all over the place that are skewing free market signals constantly. Every place the government injects itself, it really does do damage, and it hinders and burdens the economic motor, because those free market signals that are sent directly by supply and demand, you know, and what the consumer activity and the consumer need is.
Yeah,
go ahead.
My last point, Dave, I'll let you go. The what we've got today is a merge of communism and capitalism.
Yeah, I'll have to agree with you on that. We got to go to break now, and then we're going to take one more call from Texas. This is Red Pill Politics, and you're listening to the Republic Broadcast Network. We'll be on the other side of the break.
That kept telling you lies. It was hard to do, but it came down to you.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
standing 6'4", weighing 245 pounds of crime-fighting, political science-analyzing brawn. Ladies and gentlemen, Dr. Patrick Slattery.
So, Mike, get off this anti-cicada agenda.
I'm a born-again traditional Christian, and my favorite possessions are right here on my nightstand. That would be the King James Bible and my .357 revolver.
I'd rather be ruled by Chinamen than Jews.
Cool it with the anti-Semitic remarks, right?
Just because you steal an election and terminate the republic doesn't mean you terminate the people in the republic, because we're still here.
I'm not taking the vaccine. Fuck you, Bill Gates.
There was a way forward still on January 6th. What needed to be done is to object to every single state.
The COVID-19 virus was the setup. The vaccine could very well be a bioweapon.
The Patrick and Jeremy Show, Tuesday at 9 Central and Wednesday at 1 Central.
My name is John. I'm the founder of Black Owl Coffee, and I started Black Owl because I really love coffee. I've always loved coffee, and after traveling so much to Europe, South America, and trying so many different coffees that were so good, and every time I came back to the U.S., I was so disappointed with the coffee, so I figured that I had to do something about it. The biggest difference is on the beans and the roasting process, how we roast it, and how fresh it is. The fresher the roast, the better the quality. Here I have like all of the coffee. It's roasted within 1 to 2 days prior to being shipped. So it literally gets to consumers' house within 3 to 5 days after being roasted. If you like coffee, you have to try ours. It's fresh roasted. It's one of the best beans that we can get, and you will definitely see the difference.
Visit blackoutcoffee.com and use the coupon code REPUB10. That's REPUB10.
Extendivite has proven time and again it really works. Here's a testimonial from Amazon.com. I am only 40, but I have put my body through hell working in manufacturing for 20 years. I recently started to notice a buzzing feeling along with a stuttering sensation with my heart. I had a full cardio stress done, which I passed. I decided to try Extendivite after getting the jingle stuck in my head. Halfway through the bottle, I really did notice a difference. After getting home from work, I would just sit in a chair for a few hours feeling like crap, and this stuff reduced that feeling along with heart discomfort to almost nothing. Extendivite is only $69.95 for a 2-month supply. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com. That's HEARTDROP.com.
Extend
is Red Pill Politics Show, and I would like to invite y'all to head over to republicbroadcasting.org, check out the other programmers in the schedule. I'm sure there is something there to your liking, 24/7 content, all kinds of good stuff. And of course, Red Pill Politics is over on tlbtalk.com. I'd like to encourage you to expand your footprint of free speech and head on over to tlbtalk.com, set yourself up a page, be confident that fact checkers are not going to come in there and shut you down every time you say the word vaccine or Fauci or Google. All right, you can talk about these things there. I encourage you to do it. And of course, on your way by, hit that donation button. Whatever you can give, big, small, it's all greatly appreciated. It's all listener funded over here at Republic Broadcasting Network, and it what keeps the speech free. So give as you can. Let's jump into it. We got another caller from Texas. Alan, how are you tonight?
Well, Dave, physically I'm great. Mentally I slip in and out of sanity in today's world. As far as the, we shouldn't have a fertilizer problem at all. You know, go to D.C. or any state capital, and half the budget has to go for people going in and scooping up these shiitake mushrooms that build up every time a politician opens up its mouth. But that's another subject. Dave, I've listened to you talk, about you, the way you grew up. You were hunting in the mountains up there on the East Coast, and I basically kind of grew up in the Ozark Mountains, the hill country of Texas every now and then. And, used to make money. I used to get up and run a trap line. I trapped beavers, coons, muskrats, possums, everything, skinned them out, stretched the skins, dried them, made extra money that way, It was a real nice way to do it, It took some work, but, you can't do that anymore. And you were bringing up earlier about basically the sheer helplessness of people in being able to repair things for themselves, fix things for themselves.
Yeah.
And I know that today's world has made that a lot more impossible. It's like I can do hydraulics, pneumatics, electronics. Except for these little teeny tiny micro circuitry stuff they've got. It used to be all you take a board out and you could look at a resistor and tell if it was burnt. You could desolder it and solder a new resistor in and it would work again, They've made stuff throw away. But, Dave, out here, I've got a 1948 Ford 8N tractor. Now, I've got the original owner's manual that came with this tractor. And it tells you crazy things in today's world that would never work. They say, if the hydraulics aren't working, it's like start the tractor up, put it in neutral because it's not a live peat, hydraulics. So the crankshaft has to be turning for the hydraulic pump to be working. And if the lift arms aren't working, so take the side plate off and it tells you it's like stick your hand into the transmission down in the oil over, where the pump is and see if you can feel, blow-bys or a crack in the pump or a gasket blown out or something. Back then, I guess people didn't have to know. It's like, well, don't stick your finger down into the pump because you won't have any fingers left. today's world, Dave, is just so freaking helpless. I can repair anything that's put in front of me.
The coffee that you buy at McDonald's is going to be hot. It's crazy what we've become. And, you don't have to know everything. But the closeness of our families and the closeness of our neighbors... one of my most favorite places in the world, I bow hunt. It's up in upstate New York. I haven't been there in a number of years, and I sorely miss it. Up there, when you're driving down these roads, people pass each other and they wave. I go down to a little diner in the morning at like 4 in the morning with the other hunters to have breakfast in a place where, everyone's talking. They know each other. They know what's going on around them. If you're a welder and you need something welded and your buddy that you see, is a welder and if you need your roof done, your whatever, people did things for each other and bartered back and forth. That's how you survived up there. There wasn't always a big exchange of money. People knew how to do
it. I can fix anything, but, I've actually found I've fixed things for people. And it'll work as good or better than before I fixed it, but it doesn't look like OEM. So they're like, they're like embarrassed. It's like, what? The only time someone's going to see this is like if you like run over them and they see that your axle's been welded back together by someone who wasn't a professional. But if you took it to your car dealer, they'd say, oh yeah, well that'll cost you $8,000, and you'll have a new plastic frame and everything. We'll have to replace the whole frame. And you'll get better gas mileage, but it'll cost you $8,000. And I could have done it for free in 30 minutes for them, but they don't want that because.
Yeah. Yeah, well, look up planned obsolescence. Planned obsolescence. Most of the stuff in this consumer-based society that we're in, they make as many things disposable as possible. That's why they make cell phones now that you can't take the batteries out of. You can't just go
Dave, this winter, it doesn't get real cold here in Texas. So I've got like this little, electric radiant heater. I just knocks the chill off. When it's 30 something degrees outside, it might be, 60 degrees inside. doesn't bother me. But, you know, it went out. And it's like, well, do I just throw it away? It's like, no, I took the cover off and got my test meter out. And I'm like, okay, power's here, power's here, power's here. And there's this little piece of crap Chinese thermocouple down there that, you know, it's like it's there in case it actually gets hot. It shuts it off, you know. And I'm like, well, what the screw this? And it's like I went out. I looked at the old one I had. It's like, well, it didn't even have a thermocouple in it. So I just bypassed the thermocouple, plugged it back in, plugged it in, and I've got an electric heater again. Probably everyone else that bought this same model of heater probably burned out, you know, after a year or two of use, and they're probably in, you know, taking up landfill space now.
Yeah, well, there's going to be a number of people out there.
5 or 6 years, hell, who knows? You know, and Dave, what really pees me is, like I said, I can repair damn near anything, but you know how infuriating it is? Even if you can get a repair part to fix something, the repair part that you get to repair the cheap piece of crap that went out in the first place is even cheaper than the cheap piece of crap you're repairing.
Yeah, I had a caller earlier tonight say that there was a warehouse near him that had a whole bunch of machining tools, all kinds of machines, in a warehouse just in mothballs. Now, I find a lot of those because many of those machines, the Bridgeports, came from Connecticut. You know, many of those are right up here local in the Northeast area. And I've actually purchased, I have pretty much everything you need. There's three machines required to rebuild the world. And I've waited
for a mill, a lathe, and
a surface grinder.
And a surface grinder. There you go. Yep. Well, and Dave, you know, Dave, I use redneck technology. I do have a drill press. That is, you know, if I need to turn a part down, I chuck it up in my chuck, and I use an angle grinder to turn it down, and then, you know, maybe a file, and eventually I get down to emery paper if I'm making like a pin to build an AK or, you know, or something like that.
Yeah. Well, here's
I do redneck technology.
Yeah, I don't want to pop your bubble here, and there's people out there that are prepared and are capable and will be able to weather what's coming, but there are many, many more, 1,000% more people, and particularly when you get into the urban areas where they're so accustomed to really having everything delivered to their door, unrest is going to come about quick. And although you and I might be better prepared and can withstand, the loss of services, are we going to be able to withstand and protect those things that we have from the unrest that is going to happen? If you go and read books like Strategic Relocation, which was a wonderful, historically rich book about what happens during unrest? What happens in the following hours as something unfolds, and all your major north, south, east, west roads hit gridlock almost right away because people go to work with no gas in their tank, a breakdown. It doesn't take much to stop everything, and then it just moves out.
Dave, if you've got the military against you. I don't know if you've ever flown one of these drones that you can buy for, like, you know, $1,000 or $1,600. They've got a camera that's like you can fly this drone up and you can get the restrictions and you can go up like 2,000 feet. You'll never know it's there. And just a drone you can buy. You can lock it on a target and it will follow that target as long as it can. Targeting technology they have, see, most people don't understand if they really want to bring to bear against us what they actually have. We're pretty much up crap creek, you know, without a paddle, and you're in a canoe, and there's rapids ahead.
Went down with the Northeast. We organized the Northeast to go to the convoy in D.C., and we were under observation the entire time.
Yeah.
There was drones almost everywhere we were. Some of them were our own people playing with their drones, but there were others that were just sitting there photographing and watching. Yeah.
Well, you know, Google Earth and I mean, the military technology. I mean, I know people who've been, like, you know, with naval intelligence, and I can tell you scarier than crap stories about guys saying, how the hell my brother know I still smoke Marlboro cigarettes? I said, he works for naval intelligence. He dedicated a satellite. He's watching you sitting out on your porch outside your house smoking a cigarette. You said, I haven't seen my brother in 6 months. How in the hell does he know I'm still smoking Marlboros? I'm like, I'll tell you how rich he is. You know, your brother works for Naval Intelligence. They've got capacities that people have no idea. If they want to watch you, if you give them the slightest reason, they can watch you. I can tell you stories that I know for a fact have happened to me just in my local area. We're in a lot of trouble. I'm very self-reliant. I can skin a coon. I can run a trot line. I can skin a buck. You know, I can survive for a while. What scares me, Dave, sometimes is that I've got relatives up and down the road I live on. Most of them are very well armed. You know, we shot. You know, I got a Daisy Cub BB gun when I was 5, a 22 when I was 6, a Mossberg 20-gauge pump shotgun when I was 8, and a 30-30 bolt-action rifle when I was 9. You know, been shooting my whole life. My relatives up and down the road have been doing the same thing, and I've always talked to them. They think I'm crazy. You know, get some storage food, you know, just in case. If I'm crazy, you can eat it later. You know, it's good.
Yeah, it's an investment. I've actually
had several of them say, well, if anything happens, I'll just come up to your place. And I look at them, and I just dead in the eye, and I say, no, that's why I'm telling you this now, because I don't want to have to shoot at you when you're coming up my driveway.
Yeah.
They're very, I mean, they've got everywhere up to like 50 BMG, you know. I mean, if he could see me a mile and a half away, he could probably shoot me, you know. There's good and there's bad in that. And
yeah,
what
are not prepared.
Happen, Dave, I can't say, but it kind of keeps me uneasy.
Yeah, people have got to get really serious about those things that they just need to be alive. Food, and if you're on medications. You know, some people have heart medications or thyroid medications, all kinds of things that they rely on. You need to grab those things now while they're available. And food and water, if you don't have that, your longevity in this fight is counted in days.
I've got springs I've been drinking out of since I was a kid up here. I've built a pond on a creek in my place. It's full of fish. I could live a couple of years just on the frickin' fish in my pond, you know.
Yeah. How many people around you?
But I know how to do that stuff. It would be very inconvenient not having electricity. And you know, I don't have a computer, cell phone, none of that crap. You know, I'm about as basic as I can get.
Yeah.
And I've just watched the world change around me, Dave. I'm still basically just a mountain redneck boy who just wants to be left the hell alone, you know?
Yeah, well, that describes a lot of America. They just want to be left alone, live their lives, and... You know, that's really about it. When people a lot of times ask what the convoy is about and why people are so agitated, and I listen to what everyone's response is, but in a very systemic way, it's really that they just want to be left alone. There's a whole lot of little things that people gripe and bitch about, and they are government exceedances. So, you know, in general... You know, government's got to go back to really Article 1, Section 8, and just focus on that mostly. That's the only proactive things they're supposed to do. All this other stuff is smoke and mirrors.
Well, you know, Dave, you know, it's like anarchy, you know. That's not a real bad word. It just means no centralized government telling you what the hell to do. There are, you know, under anarchy, you know, there's rules, you know. But they're common sense rules that everyone needs to live by. It's like, do what you want to until it invades on someone else. And then someone else might have something to say about it instead of just wanting more tax money so they can pop more babies out and get more money and live free on everyone else's. You know, farmers, you know, like you were talking earlier. Farmers, bitch, all of these people living in the projects, they just keep popping out babies and get more welfare money. And the government comes in and says, we're going to pay you not to work your fields this year, Mr. Farmer.
Yeah, they incentivize.
I won't have to spend money on diesel and work and go out and harvest and worry about rains. I'll take those subsidies and those that money for not working. What do you call it when the government pays you for not working? Oh, well, that's welfare. No, it's not.
Well, that's part of the immigration problem or the invasion problem. It's not really immigration. Is they've incentivized them to do that. Yes. So all the incentives, and they're saying it's what the people want, well, no one's beating their door down to roll out that many billions of dollars that's leading to our own destruction. This is what they want. So, you know, they're out of control. They've come unglued. I'm not sure how to bring them back in because I've talked about this on the show before, that we've let it go to the point where all three branches of government, they were all supposed to be watchdogs of each other, So no one of them began to creep up out of control as the other two were there to rein them in. We've got three co-equal branches of government that have co-equally corrupted. They've corrupted at the same time together and haven't ratted each other out to the point where the us and them, we think it's Democrat and Republican, when in reality it's global government and an establishment government and we the people. We've got to put our baggage aside. That's why the
many people in today's world expect a free ride. They don't expect any adversity or hardship and have to work and sweat and toil for anything. And
that's our most important right. Our most
we've been taken away from the land, and we have become predictable. And Dave, you know, a major part of your freedom is your unpredictability. Because if you're predictable, if they can predict what you're going to do, you ain't got a lot of freedom, do you?
Right. But as an individual, I feel that one of our most important rights, if we want to aspire to greatness and we want, you know, better for ourselves, better for our families, our most important right is the right to fail, because whatever we have the liberty to take on and do
to
and
fail
invest
on your own.
Yes.
Not because the system is oppressing you and it's harder than hell to be honest and decent.
Right.
And be successful.
Yes.
Because
if you have the right to fail, that what I'm getting at is there should be no safety net. Yeah. Government shouldn't come in and subsidize a corporation or banks because they made a bad decision while they were fleecing us. You know,
that's crony capitalism, Dave. You know, that's just wrong. You know, capitalism is good, but it's never pure capitalism. Pure socialism is actually not a bad thing, but when it becomes crony, that's when it turns into communism and fascism and, you know, whatever, communitarianism, whatever in the hell other name you want to give it. You know, it's just...
I gotta challenge you. You used socialism, you said, and used it as if it were an end point.
No. I'm not a socialist by any means, believe me.
No, what I'm saying is a lot of times people refer to socialism as an end point, a form of government that is that way and that particular nation of socialists will remain that way forever, and they won't.
Socialism, if a woman loses her husband and she's got three children, has no means of income, you know, the local community used to take care of them. That's what churches used to do.
Yes.
They would help those people instead of the government doing it, and it wasn't a lifelong thing. It was just, we'll help you out until you can get back on your feet and find a job, and, and the community would help the children. People knew each other.
See, I grew up in a house where my great-grandmother died at home in the house with us. All right, now we live in a day and age where spouses are left to die in old age homes. Kids put their parents away in these homes, and things have changed.
The Waltons, the old show, the Waltons.
I do remember that.
Generations living in a house. The parent, the children were taking care of their parents, and they had their children living in the house too. Sure, it was different, sappy, but that's what family is, and the family unit is. They've broken that up way long ago, and that was one of their main objectives, and it's very effective. What means of warfare?
Okay. Yeah. Hey,
I appreciate talking with you. I love your show. I listen to your background, the way you grew up, and I'm like, damn, it's like me, except for I was in the Ozarks and he was out on the East Coast, in New York or Massachusetts or somewhere. And I know you know what's going on. I've got a degree in zoology, but I saw how research has been bastardized. And when I read Kennedy's book on the real Anthony Fauci, just put everything in blatant perspective as to what I saw when I was wanting to become a research scientist. And I was like, doing environmental research, we've got to keep our grant funders happy, really. Went into cell molecular biology, played with the electron microscopes, all that good crap, developmental biology, embryology.
I saw my research data.
Well, we've got to massage our data so the grant funders stay happy. And I'm like, seriously?
Yeah, they did that with me. I did independent studies. I had the first documented case of deformed amphibians here in the state. As I found a location, I had a bunch of yellow-spotted salamanders with five legs and 6 feet. And I did several studies while I was in college, some pretty in-depth stuff in the colleges. Every time you do an independent study like that, you've got to sign papers saying that they hold all the patent rights to anything that you might discover.
Yep.
Junk science, it was all around me. It was a half of the battle was learning the material, and the other half of the battle was discerning the junk science that was starting to permeate, especially in the environmental sciences.
Fighting the bureaucracy and what came in with Anthony Fauci and his takeover and bastardization of the whole research community. Yes, hey, you know, amphibians, oh, man, they're great. Only three chambered heart thing on the planet, but very susceptible to environmental influences.
Yes.
Dave, love your show. I'll let you get on, man.
All right. Thanks a lot for the call. Appreciate it. All right. I was Alan from Texas. Good stuff there. And you know me, we're going to dive more into this science stuff. I'm not afraid of delving into that at all. I don't call myself a scientist, but I'll tell you, I learned enough to where I know when I smell a rat. We're going to talk more about climate, soils, this fertilizer stuff. I think this is going to be something worth talking about and covering as we go into the growing season this year. If you need that stuff, get it. Protect it. All right? Be thinking about this, all right? When we start hearing early indicators and warnings of things this important and this profound, you got to move on it. And the food, I've only been telling you since the very first show I ever did here on the network that you need to be investing in food. And it is an investment. Very worst case scenario, you get 3 to 5 years worth of food up in your pantry and in your basement, and you say, I think that'll probably do it. And then you start rotating it out. Use it. Learn how to cook with these types of preserved foods. And you'd be surprised. We used to do that. We whipped up some really good, tasty stuff. So, anyways, I really love and appreciate y'all. I have an absolute blast coming on the show here every week and sharing ideas, taking calls. Stop by republicbroadcasting.org. Visit the website. Hit the donation button if you would. Support what we're doing. redpillpoliticsshow@gmail.com is the email address if you want to get on the mailing list. And of course, check us out. We're all over on Gab, we're on TLB Talk, but we're never going to be on Facebook and Twitter again. All right, love and appreciate y'all. Fly your flags high, keep your powder dry, love each other out there.
Are you sick of censorship? TLB Talk is the cure. TLB stands for Truth, Liberty, and Balance. We are the newest and most unique social media platform to hit the internet. We were built out of necessity because big tech, big pharma, and big brother are out of control. The only thing bigger than them is when we, the people, are united. With that vision, TLB Talk was born. Our battlefield is in cyberspace. The battle we're in can be won by clicks of buttons and voting with your wallet. TLB Talk has no hidden agendas, no corporate funding, and we do not sell, trade, or give away any of your information. Our platform runs off of generous donations of members and merchandise profits. So please, check out our site. It's the best around. And be sure to stop by our store. It's loaded with items that'll have you feeling a sense of member pride and victory. Come unite with us today at TLBTalk.com and join the social media revolution.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.